We can start again. All right, everyone chuckle. Good, we have a live studio audience for us. Okay, welcome to the walkthrough for problem set 3. I'm Marta. These walkthroughs are again Emerson, 108 are we? Yeah, at 7 p.m. on Sundays. So we do encourage you, I know it's raining today, so. But in the future, we do encourage you to come out to these walkthroughs. If you're watching on tape, hello. And we have an agenda right here for today. As you can see, it's a lot more than we've done in past walkthroughs. So maybe it'll be a little bit shorter on each individual problem because we do have a lot. That's sort of the bad news. We have a lot to go through, but we will be sure to equip you with everything you need to get the ball rolling on this problem set. The good news is we have our projector working so that we can open up terminal and stuff like that, which is a great segue into getting started on this problem set. So as always, we're going to open up terminal. Should I change my settings? Yes, because the see-through terminal won't be good. Okay, so we're going to SSH. I'm glad this doesn't come up. Okay, so now once we've SSH'd to NICE, we want to take this line exactly as is, and we want to copy it into our terminal window. We hit enter. So I've already done this, so I'm not going to overwrite the files that I've already copied. So I'm going to just hit no on all of these. But for you guys, this won't happen. So that command is going to copy everything that's in this week's distribution code into your directory for CS50. Now, what is distribution code? You've never had it before. For this problem set, we're asking you to implement the game 15. So it is a little bit of a bigger task than, say, drawing the Mario game board or creating a Caesar cipher and stuff like that. So we don't expect you to do all the code by yourself. So we have included this distribution code for you. Now, I have to CD into my directory where I have it. Pset 3. So I put in a different directory. Yours will not be in this dist directory. I just wanted to distinguish it from my actual code for my problem set from before, because we don't want to be showing that. Okay, so we're going to go into our find directory, and you guys are going to have this too when you copy over. Okay, now we can all see it. Okay, so now we are going to go into the find directory. We're there right now. We're going to ls, so list all the contents of that directory. And as you can see, we have find.c, generate.c, helpers.c, helpers.h, and makefile. So let's take a look at generate.c. And this is your first task on this problem set. Your first task is to go through this code for this file, this program called generate, and your task is to figure out what generate does. So this generate program, it says at the very top of the program what this program does, right? So it generates some pseudo-random numbers. Now, why are they called pseudo-random and not random? Yes? They're not really random. Good. So the computer can't actually, you can't tell the computer, pick a number off the top of your head from 1 to 20. It can't do that. So you have to give it an input called a seed, and then it takes that seed, and from that seed it creates this pseudo-random number. So this is generate.c. We already know what the program does, because we have that comment at the very top, which is very useful. But we need to, as programmers, know, well, not always, but in this case, we need to know what each sort of part of this program does. So we know overall if we put in this input, we'll get this output about this program, but we want to know how it does that. And looking through code like this and try to figure out why are they having this for loop, why are they having this if statement, really lets us think about how to implement different things. So that's the exercise here. Everywhere it says to do, comment me, that means that your task right there is to write comments for what this part of the program is doing, what this part of the program is doing, all the way down to the bottom. So once you've gone through each part of the program, you will really realize how it's done. So you see some some things that you've seen before. So A to I, you used in PSET 2, so you should know what that line does. Later you have SRAND. So you've never seen SRAND before. It turns out it's a random number generator, but you haven't seen it before, Google it. That's always a solution. Google these types of things and see what kind of input they take, what kind of output they give out, stuff like that. So the first part of this problem set is relatively simple. You go through this code and you comment what each part of it does. So let's leave that alone. Am I on the screen? Yeah, let me do this. Okay. So now let's go to find.c. Well, actually, let's go to the make file. I don't know if this is okay. So this is the make file for this. Now, as you've been doing your problem sets, maybe in office hours, maybe you realize on your own that instead of doing the really long GCC tag where you have to link in all your libraries, it's much simpler to just write make. But this make didn't just appear by magic. This is a make file that someone wrote. So as you can see, it's full of aliases. If you type all, if you type make file, make all, that's going to make find and generate. Well, what are find and generate? Down here, the alias for find is gcc-ggdb. By the way, that ggdb enables GDB, which is an error checker, it's sort of a debugger program that helps you go through your code step by step and realize what it's doing. And David's actually going to go over it in lecture, I believe, tomorrow, how to use GDB. If he doesn't and you have time in section, your section leader should be able to also equip you with how to use GDB. And it's very useful, you'll see, for finding these little bugs and finding where they exist in your program. Make find actually includes this entire line, so it's like an alias. Same thing for generate. And clean, what clean does is it removes, right? RM means remove. It removes anything that ends in .o, anything with a.out, any core dumps you had. So if you had a core dump, it said like segmentation fault core dumped, that means that now in your directory somewhere you have this core file. You don't really want to submit these when you submit your problem sets. That's no big deal. You won't get points off. But it's just, you know, why would you submit something that says, oh, by the way, when I was working on this, I had a core dump. So you want to leave that out by making clean every time you have a core dump. So when you compile your program and it doesn't work and something's wrong with it but you still have it, you might want to just do make clean to get rid of all of those kind of errors. And the one thing you need to know about the make file that you need to make sure you don't forget is that this white space right here is a tab. See how my cursor just skips over it? Because it's not four spaces. But what Nano does sometimes is it equates a tab to four spaces. So make sure that you're not typing four spaces. Make sure you're typing a tab if you ever happen to maybe hypothetically be asked to make a make file. Hint, hint. Okay, so that's the make file. Now let's look at find.c. So this is find.c, and right at the top you see that you're including all these libraries, but you're also including helpers.h. So that means that whatever's happening here, it might be calling functions that aren't defined in here, that are defined in helpers.h. So we inevitably have to look in helpers.h. So this is the code. You're going to want to look through it. You're going to want to make sure there are very good comments on this. It tells you what each part of the code does. So you want to look through that and make sure you understand each part per the comments. And this is all pretty common code that you see. This should be familiar to you, this kind of code. And so what does the find program do? Does anyone know from either just from its name or from glancing at it or from reading this right here? Who can tell me what the find program does? You could just read it straight off the screen. No one wants to read it. Okay, prompts user for as many as hey max values until EOF is end of file is reached, then proceeds to search that haystack of values for given needle. So this is like the needle in a haystack problem. So if we want to use this, let's say I just type find. Whoops, oh, that's the find from... That's the find that's built into. So I have to make find. I have to make our find. Then use find. And it says, up, usage, find, needle. So what does this mean? This means that I'm not using their program correctly. This is one of those argc checks that you guys did in pset 2. If your user just types in find, that's bad. You're not writing this code. This code is already written. But you should note that they check that the argument count is 2. So here I only put in one argument. I only put in find. So it says usage, find needle. So I have to put like find 4. Then it asks me to fill the haystack with numbers. So this is like me throwing hay onto a haystack. So let's say I put a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5, a 6, 7. How do I stop? Control D, good. Control D ends the haystack, and it says found needle in haystack because I asked for a 4 and there was a 4 right in there. So that's what this code does. Now, how does it do it? Well, it does it using using helpers.c, which we'll look at in a moment. But one thing you should know, which is kind of cool, is about this thing called piping. So what you can do is you can pipe values into this program. So if you didn't want to feed in, you know, let's say you wanted to search 100 numbers and you didn't want to type in every single one of those numbers at the prompt the way I just did, you can pipe in a file that has all these numbers. But we can do even better than that, even simpler than that. We don't even need to have a file where we've typed in all those numbers because we have a really cool program that we just looked at. That can do this for us, that can give us a large amount of numbers at once. What program is that?
Generate,
exactly. So I can run generate. Oh, it's not in this. Is it not in this directory? Or? Oh, I didn't make it. Okay, we have to make generate. And then we can run generate. Up usage, generate NS. So why is this S in brackets? Does anyone know? It's optional. Good. So the S is optional. So S is actually the seed. So since this is generating pseudo random numbers, it needs a seed. If you don't provide a seed, it's going to use the time of day at the moment as its seed, as sort of its starting number from which to generate this number that seems random but is really based off of the seed. So what we can do is generate. Let's say 12. Let's say we want 12 numbers. And there we got 12 random numbers. So now if we wanted to search these 12 inside these 12 random numbers for the number 4, we can pipe these numbers in. So the way we do this is the syntax. You write generate, and let's say we want 1,024 numbers. Then you do the vertical bar, which is shift and it's above the enter, it's above return. So shift and above return, and then you can do, let's say, find 4. And it's going to automatically fill all of these values with the generated value. So this is, mind you, 1,024 values that it fit. And it says it didn't find the needle in the haystack. That means out of these 1,024 values, there was no number 4. Let's run it again and someone give me a number. 12. Oh, what happened? Oh, didn't find it. All right, so we can go on and on and on playing with this, but that's the basics of it. So what you can do, you can pipe from a program into another program, which is what we just did, because generate is a program and find is a program, or we can pipe from a program to a file, or from a file to a program. But what we just did is program to program. Now, you might not need this, but it's kind of a cool trick, so you don't have to be feeding in all, like, 1,024 values if you just want them to be random. Okay, so another thing we have to talk about before we get into the actual problem set is checking in. So there's this wonderful thing that many of you didn't know about, and maybe for that reason you lost a bunch of code. You can check in your code every time you make sort of a big change to it so that you don't lose that change. So let's say I was working on my Caesar cipher and I had everything working except it wasn't wrapping around the alphabet properly, for example. So I can check that in using CI and then the file name. So if I was to check in find, it would be CIFind.c. Okay, so if I do CIFind.c, it asks me for a description. So I can say, this program finds a number in a haystack. Then enter, then a single dot, and that's done. Now I've saved it as version 1.1 of my program. Now let's say I go back and I change a little something. Let's say now if this was my Caesar program, let's say now I've changed it so that it wraps around the alphabet properly. But what's another issue someone had in Caesar? Anyone? Okay, let's say, but now I have a new issue. So I can check in again, find.c. Well, it's unchanged, so now it won't let me check it in because I haven't changed anything. But in theory, you can change your code, then you can check it in again, and then it's going to ask you for a log message. And that log message you can write this program works, but now I have this error, or fix this error, but now I have this error. And that way you can always sort of, you won't be afraid to delete code and try it a different way because you'll have your previous version backed up. So hopefully you guys will lose less code now because of that. The way to check it out is just co and then the file name. So co find dot, whoops, I didn't type the C. co find dot C. And now it's going to ask if the writable file exists, should they remove it? This means should they replace it? So yes. And now it says done, so presumably I've checked out my find.c. Now if you want to check out a specific version, you would do check out dash r, no space, like 1.1, which is my current version, find.c. And it asks me the same thing because I'm doing the same thing that I was doing before. So you can check out your latest version, or if you want to, which is just co and then the file name, or if you want to check out a specific version, then you would do dash r and then the version number that you want, so 1.1 in this case. And then if you just want to see all the things that you've checked in, you would do r log and then the file name. So this is everything I've ever made for find.c, all my checked in versions. And it even has my little description that I wrote. So that's how you use check in. Yes?
How do you open a specific version of it?
Right, so if you want to open a specific version, you do co space dash r and then the version number with no spaces in between, space the file name. Okay, so that's checking in. It's very useful. Of course, you can get by without doing it, but you know, this way you're more likely to not lose valuable code that you've written. So now, without any further ado, let's look at helpers, which is where your first coding assignment is. So again, you have code. This helpers has two functions. It has a search function and a sort function. And your task in this case, there is a search here. What's it doing? What's the search doing? Who can tell me? What's its method of searching? If you had, like David had, if you had 10 people lined up here and the computer was doing this on them, what would it be doing? What?
It goes through each one consecutively.
Good. It goes through each consecutive person, so it goes to the first person. Are you the value I'm looking for? So are you N? No, I'm not. Are you N? Are you N? Are you N? And it keeps doing that until it gets to the end. And so this is not the most efficient search. What time does this run in? What's big O of this? Say it. N. It's n, right? Because it's a for loop that goes from 0 to n. So the worst case scenario, if you have 10 people lined up here, is that the person's either not there or at the very end, in which case you'll have to take n number of steps to get to last person and realize that you haven't found what you need. So there is a more efficient search. What is it? It says it on the screen. Binary search. Good. So this is in lecture when David ripped apart the phone book. That's binary search. So you go to the middle, right? If it's less than the middle, you throw out the right side and you use the left side. If it's greater than the middle, you throw out the left side and you use the right side. So this is binary search. Now your task is to re-implement this search as a binary search instead of the linear search that we have right now. To do this, I'm not really going to go through it very much because it's very simple if you look at David's lecture code, because he has pseudocode for this. So he literally has all of binary search written in pseudocode, which is somewhere between English and C code. And if you follow that, literally you're just translating each line for line. You're translating from pseudocode to real code. And it's functions that it's keywords that you've used before. So it shouldn't be too difficult to translate that. But if we want to do binary search, what's a precondition that we need to assume? That it's sorted, right? So you can't do binary search on an unsorted list, because then it doesn't matter if something's greater than something or less than something, because your items aren't sorted. So we need to first sort these items. So to do here is to implement an O of n squared sort. Who knows an O of n squared sort? From lecture. A sorting algorithm that runs in n squared. Selection sort, good. Someone else said bubble sort. These are all O of n squared sorting mechanisms, so you can use all those. There's better than O of n squared, and you can use those as well. So this just means no worse than O of n squared, but as far as I know, you guys haven't learned any worse than O of n squared sorts. So any sorting algorithm that was used in lecture, you can use here and implement it. For this, same thing. David does have the pseudocode for this. You could also watch the lecture video all over again when he's moving people around, sorting them to be comfortable with the algorithm. And so that should be fairly straightforward how to translate that pseudocode and those algorithms into real code. So these are your two mini problems that you have to do. Well, do we want to take a tape break now and then go into 15? Okay, so we're going to take a tape break right now and then we're going to do 15 when we come back. So 5-minute break. Making the game 15. A lot of this game is already implemented for you, like I said, in the distribution code. But let's first just get familiar with what the problem set spec says about the game for those of us that don't know the game. So these are these cheap little blocks that little kids play with, where you have one tile missing and you have to move all the tiles. They're given to you as from 15 down to 1 if it's a 4x4 board, and you have to make it go from 1 to 15 by shifting the tiles around. Now, I will repeat that you have to make sure you read the problem set spec very carefully. So even if you come to walkthroughs, even if I'm sort of telling you everything that you have to do, you have to read the problem set spec for little nuances, for little things that say, hey, watch out for this, watch out for that, because I'm not necessarily going to get to all of them in the time that we have. So in this case, we're looking at how the game is played, and as we said, it starts like this. If it's a 4x4 board, you go from 15 to 1. But there's sort of a trick in it. It's not really a trick, it's just how it has to be, that the 2 and the 1 are swapped. So the reason the 2 and the 1 are swapped is because this game cannot be solved if you put 3, 2, 1. So this only happens if your edge, so if your height, is even. So if your height is 4, you need to swap the last two tiles before you can start solving it, otherwise it won't be solvable. So when you implement your game board, you're going to have to remember this. This is one of those kind of gotcha moments, and it's not CS50 trying to trick you. It's the game 15 is actually like this. If you buy a 4x4 board for the game 15, the 1 and the 2 are switched like this. But if you have an odd number as your height, so if you have a height of 9, you're going to go from 80 down to 1 without flipping the last two tiles. So in that case, you don't worry about it. All right, so let's look at the distribution code you're given for this. I think it's about 200 lines of code that you're given. So you're going to want to read through it, make sure you understand what each part does. Again, it should be commented pretty thoroughly. Notice that up here you have the prototypes. This is sort of telling the compiler all the functions that are coming, because if you don't tell the compiler and you use the functions in your main, and then define them underneath your main function and your compiler aren't going to know what to do with them. So you have to declare these ahead of time with the type of the function and the function name. So as you can see, we have clear, greet, init, which is initialize, draw, move, and wan. Out of these 6, you have to implement 4. So 2 are already done for you, and you have to implement these bottom 4. Down here. So you want to look through the code, make sure you understand why everything is being called where it is. As you can see, the first thing that happens, ensure proper usage. So you're making sure that the argument count is 2. And the argument count needs to be 2 because the person playing your game needs to tell you what the dimensions of the board are. So the two arguments are they have to type 15 and then they have to type the height of the board. So it has to be between max. It has to be here between dim max and dim min, which are up here. So it has to, the height of the board or the dimensions have to be between 3x3 and 9x9 inclusive. So it has to be up to that size. So you can't have a 2x2 board, you can't have a 10x10 board, for example. So you're checking that the person put in the dimensions for the board. You're also checking that those dimensions fit between dim min and dim max. So that's what this part is doing. Then you initialize the board, so this is a function that we have to write. And then this part is accepting moves. So first it clears the board, which is something that they wrote, something that CS50 wrote for you, and then you have draw, which is what you're going to write. Here it's going to check for the win, because if the game is won, you're not going to keep playing. So if won, and we have to write that Boolean function. Boolean means it returns either true or false. So we're going to have to write that. You're going to prompt for a move, and then we're going to have to execute the move. Move is also Boolean, because not only does it move the tile, it also returns true if it moved it successfully and false if it could not move it. Now, the reason you wouldn't be able to move it is if there's no empty tile next to it, as per the rules of the actual physical game 15. And then that's it. You sleep is also something that they wrote, and you return zero. So down here is where your functions are going to be. So void clear, that's already done. Greets is already done. Here is what you need to do. So everywhere it says to do, you guys have to fill it. So these are four functions, and we're going to walk through each of them. Now, any questions about the code that's on the screen before I shut it off? Yeah. Yeah, the question was that the functions are being called above where they're declared. They're actually being declared right up here. That's why I mentioned the prototypes. So this is where you're declaring the functions, and then down there you're writing the functions themselves. But the compiler knows that they're coming, knows to expect them because of these prototypes. And these parentheses here means that they take no arguments. So the functions aren't going to take any arguments. So the compiler knows if they see in the main function, if they see in it, it knows not to that it doesn't take any arguments, so it knows to let the person use init in main, even though init isn't written until the bottom. Yeah? Any other questions about this code specifically? Or like the basic workings of this code? Okay, cool. So let's go off the projector so that I can use the board. Or actually, maybe I'll just do this. And so I can still have the screen for myself. Okay. Okay, much brighter now. All right, so for initialize, I'll wait for that. Okay, so for the initialize function, what we need to do is initialize the board to how it is when we start the game. So that means if it's, let's work with a 4x4 board, and you should always think of this as the physical game. So we're going to be talking in a moment about how this is actually a two-dimensional array, stuff like that, but you just need to think of it as the physical board. If you think of the game 15, if you look at a picture of the game 15, if you Google images the game 15, just think of that board. It'll make it so much simpler and so much clearer for you in your mind. You can even, you know, number your, you can even, if you print out a picture of this board, for example, just draw it yourself and number the columns and the rows just to make it so much easier for you to think of it. So let's consider a 4x4 board. So okay, so this is our 4x4 board. We are going to have our height as I and our width as J. So when we initialize the board, we're going to refer to the height as I and the width as J. Now, what does this remind you of? Something you've already done. What does this remind you of, this setup of having one variable that goes down, one that goes across? Well, I mean, Battleship is a game, but you guys didn't do that. You guys did Mario. Right, so this is exactly the format of Mario. Remember, you were drawing stars across? So that's how you're going to think of this board, too. So when you did it in Mario, how did you do it? What was the construction that you used to make this I and this J? Exactly, four loops inside of four loops. So if you just nested four loops, you're going to do very much the same thing here to create your board. So your board is going to be, what's it filled with? What's your board filled with?
Numbers.
So its type is int. So board is an int. And what kind of data structure is a board? Is it a string? Is it? It's an array. Good. So it's an array of ints. But is it just this? Is it just an array like this? Exactly. It's a double array. It's a two-dimensional array. This is a one-dimensional array. So if you just had this, you would basically just have the first row. Okay? And this would be your array of numbers. But you want a double array. It's going to be like this. And what are the sizes of this array? What's going to be in each of these for the size? The dimension. Exactly. So it's what the user put in as the dimension, which is D in this case. Okay. So now you have your board. Now, from what number to what number is your board supposed to go? So it's going from high to low, right? Well, it's going for high to low, so it's going to go from 15 to what?
2.
To 1. Well, it ends with the 2, right? We're going to want this to be a 2. But we're going to go from 15 to 1, right? Those are going to be all the numbers that are going to fill our board right here. So if our dimension right now, what's our dimension? 4, right? Because we're 4 by 4. So our dimension is 4. So what's 15 in relation to 4? D squared minus 1, exactly. So your, let's call it N equals D times D minus 1. Okay, so now N is going to be the highest that your numbers go, and you're going to want to go down to 1. And as you go, as you decrement N, you're going to want to fill in these tiles. So what? How do you refer to this tile? This tile right here. If this whole thing is called board, so it's board what? Board 0, 0, right. But in the general case, it's going to be what? So not for this specific tile, but for any tile, how do you refer to it with variables? IJ, right. So if you have your for loops that are nested and they're I and J, then you refer to the space in the board as IJ. So what the initialize function needs to do is to take this array interpretation or this array sort of structure and fill it with the numbers. So you're not actually drawing a board at this point. That's going to be in the function draw. You just want to go to each tile and put in the correct number value. So if I wanted to put something in board 0, 0, what would I do? If I wanted to put the number 3 in there, what do I write?
Equals.
Three. Yeah, exactly. Simple. So if I want to put a 3 in there, I just put equals 3. But we said that we're using this general case, right? We have nested for loops like in Mario. The outer one is I, the inner one is J. So the outer one goes down the heights. The inner one goes across the columns. And so we're going to take each one, I, J, and what are we going to put in it? We're not just going to put 3 in all of them, right? N, good. So we're going to put N, but then we want to make sure that at some point we're changing N, right? So the first time our for loop goes, remember, our for loops are I and J. N is not a variable in the for loop. N is its own variable. Much like, I don't know how you guys implemented Visionaire, but in Visionaire many people had a separate variable that incremented the letters of the key in Visionaire, and that wasn't defined in your for loop parentheses, right? It was defined outside. So you're going to have this N, and every time that you assign it to a space on the board, what do you do with it? Right, so you decrement it. Okay? I think that's just about enough code for this part of the walkthrough. Any questions? Is anything unclear? Okay, so this is how you initialize your board. So at the end of the initialize part of this problem set, of the 15 file, you should have a board that's a two-dimensional array that's all filled with the numbers. But remember, at the end, if this is a 4x4, we want 3, 1, 2. Exactly. This for loop is going to fill it so that it's 3, 2, 1. And then afterwards, we have to switch them. We have to swap them. So here, you're going to want to go back to David's lectures because he has exactly written in real code, in real source code, not even pseudocode, a swap function. So you want to use that swap function to swap these. But do you always want to swap these? No. When do you want to swap them? Only if you get an even height. So how do you check that? Not I, because it doesn't matter what height you're on, right? You're going to be on an odd height, an even height, an odd height. D, exactly. You want to check if D is even. If D is even, you want to swap these last two tiles. You're also going to have to think about how to refer to these last two tiles, right? Okay, so think about that. I'm not going to tell you, but think about how you refer to this tile, how you refer to this tile, and then put those in the swap function that David wrote. Now, this swap function, you're going to need more than once. as you'll see later, because every time you make a move right on the board, you need to swap the tiles. So a good way of doing this would be to write another function outside of these functions that's the swap function, and then just call it every time you need it. Because that's much better design than copy and pasting your swap function and just changing around the variables. Better to pass variables to it and swap those. Do you have a question?
Does it have to be a square, or can it be rectangular?
For accessing elements of the array? Oh, does the board have to be a square? Yes, the board has to be a square. Yeah. For the game 15 to work, it has to be a square. Any other questions? Okay, great. So now we're going to move on to our move function. Or, sorry, our draw function first. Let's do draw first. Okay, so draw is relatively simple, right? Because we've already initialized it, so we already have all our values inside our array, and all we want to do is print them out, right? So how are we going to print these variables out? How are we going to do it? Well, again, we have to go square by square. So how are we going to do that? Yeah, we're going to do the same exact thing with the two nested for loops, I and J, so we can go square by square. And then what do we want to print inside each square? Right, so the value that's stored inside of it. So we're going to print a variable, right? So it's going to change every square as we move on. So the variable is going to be what type? Right, so what do we write for the printf? Percent D, right. But what we want, if we just did percent D, our board would look... it would look something like this, right? So a good way of doing this is to use your adjustment to this, right? You can add numbers in here if you remember from lecture. So what could we write to make each number take up, let's say, a width of 3? Percent 3D, right? Percent 3D. Okay, so percent 3D is going to make sure our numbers are nicely spaced out. Now, I believe you should double check the problem set, but I believe that this is up to you. You can make it percent 4, you can make it percent 18. You'll just have a different looking board. But I believe, as far as my understanding of the spec is, that you can do however you like. So for each tile that you get to, you're going to put this as your variable, sort of, in printf. And then what's going to be the... on the other side of it. What is it?
Board.
Right. Board what? Because you can't print the whole board at once, right? And we're inside a nested for loop here.
Board IJ.
Right. Board IJ.
Isn't that the same thing as 1? Or N, sorry.
What do you... oh, well... if we, right, so she said this is the same thing as N, but we don't want to have to reiterate through N all over again if we already have it initialized. It's already stored inside of board, so there's no reason for us to have another N and have it drawing because those values are already inside. The other reason we don't want to do that is because we're drawing the board every time a move happens. So if we just went with N and decremented N, then every single time we drew the board, it would be the initial board. We don't want to just draw the initial board. We want to draw the board at whatever state it's at. And every time we do a move, we're going to be altering this board IJ. So it's going to be different every time. It's not always going to be what we just did with the n's from 15 down to 1, or down to the swapped 1 and 2. Okay, so we want to use this sort of printf again. I think that's more than enough code for this part of the problem set. But you also, once you get to the end of your line, right, much like in Mario, you want to go to the next line. Make sure you don't have, you know, each tile on a different line. But you'll play around with this until you get it right. Okay, so now we get to the meat of the problem. We get to move. So in move, let's talk about it in English. If we were just playing the game 15, how do you move? What's sort of your thought process? Right, you shift, but can you just shift any tile anywhere? Right, so you have to check if next to the tile that you want to move, there's an empty space. Right, so let's redraw our board. Okay. You want to check if there's an empty space next to the tile you want to move. So when the game starts, this is an empty space. Also, by the way, when you initialize your board, you're going to have to initialize this empty space. So make sure you don't forget about that. Make sure that you have this empty space, because you always have to have it at the end once you initialize the board. And now there's various ways of doing it. A good way of doing it is to just store it as a zero, because then you can compare mathematically well. You could also store it as a D squared, right? So this could be a 16, sort of, because you want this to be at the end, right? But then when you draw the board, you want to make sure that if you're at the value 16, you don't print the 16 out, but instead you replace it with a space, or I think it's an underscore. I'm not sure what it says exactly in the spec. I think maybe either one is okay, but you guys should double check. So you want to make sure that this is stored inside the actual array that we have as a number. So either 0 or 16, depending on which way you're implementing it. But make sure that when it's actually printed, you don't get that number, because you want it to resemble a blank space. Okay, so you want to check whenever you are at a tile that you want to move. So let's say the person wants to move this tile. You want to make sure that the tile to the right of it is a blank space. So now you don't check if it's a blank space, right? Because that's just what's printed. But what's underneath the hub is the number that you put in there. So you always want to check if you made these blank spaces all zero, you want to check if it's zero. If you made these blank spaces D squared, you want to check that it equals D squared. And only then can you move. So how do you check the one to the right of this? If this is going to be this tile that we're currently looking at in our for loop, what's the tile that we're currently looking at in our for loop? Right, so board IJ. Okay, so if this is board IJ, what's this one? So it's still board I, right? It's on the same height, and then J plus 1. So that's going to check the one to the right of it. This isn't C code. I'm just telling you that this is checking the one to the right of it. How do you check the left?
Minus 1.
So say the whole thing. Right, board I, J minus 1. The top?
Board I, J.
It's not plus 1. The top is?
Minus, because you're going down.
Right, the top is minus because you're going down. So I is 0, 1, 2, 3. So the top is I minus 1, J, and the bottom is?
I plus 1, J.
Good. So now what happens if I'm here at the same tile and I'm doing these checks? I'm going to check this one. I'm going to check this one. I'm going to check this one. Oops. What did I get, everyone?
Seg fault.
Seg fault, exactly. If you had all said it together, we would have heard it on the video and everything. Okay, so here you get a seg fault. So you want to make sure that if you are in the last row, the first row, the leftmost row, the rightmost row, that you're not checking outside, right? So if you're in the first row, you want to make sure you don't check up. If you're on the left, you want to make sure you don't check left, etc., because then you will get a seg fault. So if you're doing this problem and you get seg faults, make sure that you're doing this kind of check. Okay, so if everything's cool, I didn't get any seg faults, I checked if this was a blank space, and lucky for me it was, what do I do to these tiles? Swap, exactly. So here's where the swap function comes in again. You want to swap these two tiles. And again, you're going to have to figure out how to refer to the last tile, how to refer to the second to last tile, etc. The other thing is this is a Boolean function, right? So this is supposed to return ultimately either true or false. So after you've made the move, and your move should alter the board's state, so it should alter board IJ, and once you've altered it, and it should also alter the empty space to have been swapped. So once you've altered it, you want to return true. But if you couldn't move because you were, let's say, at this block, and this was full, this was full, this was full, and this was full, now you can't move, now you want to return false. So these are those return values and functions. At the end of main, you'll usually have like a that's all folks comment in David's code, or maybe a everything's cool in someone else's code, and it'll return zero. So int functions can return zero if nothing's wrong, but Boolean functions have to return either true or false. So you would literally write, like, return true or return false in English. And that would be how you ended that function. Now, our last function, and then we're done. is to implement a win checker. So this, what type is the win checker? No, I mean, what type is the function? Is it like main, an int function, or? Exactly, it's also a bool, good. So it's one, it's also a bool, so it ultimately has to return either true or false. So just think about if you were babysit a little kid, you gave them the game 15, you gave them their game board, they played around with it, they gave it back to you, and they said, did I win? Did I do it right? What would you check?
Sequence.
Right, so you would check, he said the sequence. So you could check if, you know, if it's going from 1 to 15, which is what it's supposed to be doing if we have the 4x4 board. So how would you check? You have to think about how you would check that in C. So again, you're going to need to go through each tile. And if you're doing it that way, if you're trying to see if it goes from 1 to 15, you would do the same thing we did when we initialized, right? Where you had a variable that was incrementing, and at first that variable was 1. And you checked, in the first iteration of my for loop, is board ij equal to this variable that we have, in this case 1. And if it is, then move on to the next one. And if it's ever not, return false. And then if you end up exiting that for loop, that means everything was okay, and then you want to return true. So that's sort of what all of these look like. Does anyone have any questions? Yes. Okay, so you're not changing anything inside the main function. You're writing all of your code underneath the main function where the function's already sort of, there's already a skeleton for the function, and there's a \\, and it says to do, write code here, or something like that. So that's where you want to fill in your code. Make sure you keep it in there and don't change any of the names of the functions because they are being called inside of main. Any other questions? Okay, so the question was, do you check the want function every move? You do, but you don't have to worry about that because it's already done for you inside of the main. So when we looked at main, we saw when it was calling draw, when it was calling move, and it calls both of these every time, every move sort of. It calls move and then draw and then to check if it's a win. So you don't actually have to worry about calling these functions. You have to worry about implementing each one of them. And this is actually a great exercise. This is a great problem set because it is sort of like real life programming where you're going to, you know, if you become software developers or anything like that, you are going to be given a huge chunk of code. Even in next week's problem set, you're going to be given a huge chunk of code. And you're going to have to understand what that chunk of code does, and you're going to have to put in your little bits and pieces. And it's a great thing that you can factor out this code just like I just told you to factor out your swap function, because then anyone can use that code inside of the main. You don't necessarily have to know how it works, you just have to know when to call it and how to call it, what arguments it takes, and that's why we have the prototypes. So it all comes together very nicely, and it's a good exercise in programming and collaborative programming, so it'll be good. Enjoy working with distribution code. Any other questions? Okay, well then you'll also get more explanations about all this stuff in section, I hope, in lecture. You'll learn how to use GDB, and we'll see you next week for problem set 4 walkthrough. Thank you all for coming.